topic we're going to discuss, Eliyahu HaNavi, the last parak in which I learned in Kedushin, the name Eliyahu appears three times in terms of figuring out who is Tameh, who's Tahor, who has good yichas, who doesn't have good yichas. It worked out just very nicely that way. So the question of who Eliyahu was or is comes up a number of places in Chazal, and there are a number of real halachic ramifications to how we understand Eliyahu and things of that sort. So it begins the Gemara in Bava Basra, and Daf Kuf Chof Alef Amud Beis has the following brisa, that Shiva Kaflus Kol Ha'olam Kula, there are seven people who live through the lifespan of the entire world. What does that mean? So Aldam, of course, was the first person. Misu Shelach saw Aldam. And then Shem saw Misu Shelach. And then Yaakov saw Shem. And Amram saw Yaakov. And Achia Shiloni saw Amram. And Eliyahu saw Achia Shiloni v'adayin kaim. That everyone saw someone from the next generation to be passed on. There was this chain from one person to the next of seeing each other. And since Eliyahu is adayin kaim, since he still lives, so and he sees everything, so there are seven people who saw the entire world. So what comes from this brisa is that Eliyahu is still alive. He's still alive. The Yalkut Shimoni writes that there are 13 people who never tasted death. A number of interesting people you find in the list. Eliezer, Eved Avram is on the list. Basya, Bas Paro is on that list. Shlosha Bnei Korach on the list. A number of interesting people we find on this list of 13 people. And then Eliyahu and Mashiach are also on that list. And then Rishu ben Levi. Now it's interesting to note, I don't really know why, but Eliyahu, Zal, he's referred to Zal as opposed to no one else has those letters there. I'm not sure what the significance of that is. But either way, Eliyahu is on this list of 13 people who never tasted death. And then the Brisa goes on, the Medrash goes on to say that there are 9 people who entered Gan Eden alive. And on that list is, once again, Eliyahu, and among others as well. So we see that Eliyahu really never died. Eliyahu is still alive. Now the Gemara in Mori Katan learned something from Eliyahu, which seems to go against this. The Gemara in Mori Katan, Daf Chof Vav Amin Aleph, writes that there are a number of people who you tear kriya when they die. A parent, you tear kriya, and you cannot re-sew, you cannot mend the rip, the tear that happened when you do the kriya. And the Gemara has a list, when you tear kriya for the father or mother, you can't fix the tear. On a Rebbe who taught you Torah, on a Nasi, Av Bezdin, and a number of other things. And the Gemara wants to know, how do we know what's the source that for a father and a mother and a Rebbe, that if you tear kriya, that you cannot fix the tear? So the Gemara brings from Malachim Beis, when Elisha, he saw that Eliyahu really disappeared. He was following after Eliyahu, and Eliyahu just suddenly disappeared. He looked the wrong way, and then next thing you know, the cloak was on the floor. Eliyahu just vanished. And he started crying, and Avi, Avi, Rachav, Yisrael, Parashav. So the Gemara explains, Avi, Avi, that's referring to his parents. And Rachav, Yisrael, Parashav, that's referring to Rebbe who taught him Torah. And the Targum explains that so great, so powerful is the tefillah of the Klai Yisrael, greater than horses and chariots. But then Gemara says, how do you know if you tear kriya for a Rebbe that you can't fix it? So the quoting the next pasuk in Malachim Beis, Vayachazek bebigdav, Elisha held on to his clothing, Vayikarim l'shnayim krum, and he ripped it in half. Two parts of the bigadim. So Gemara says, why, of course he ripped it, we know it's shnayim, why does he teach shnayim? Tadisha has to remain shnayim li'olam, he has to stay ripped forever. So Elisha tore kriya when he saw that Eliyahu vanished. The Gemara says, Reish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, Eliyahu chayhu, Eliyahu's still alive. What's he tearing kriya for? You only tear kriya when someone dies. So he responds, well, lo ra'u od, Elisha never saw him ever again. So legabe didei, at least from his perspective, in his world, Elisha's world, kimeis dami. Eliyahu was considered dead for him. So he tore kriya. So we learn the din of kriya, that you cannot fix a tear. We learn that from Eliyahu dying. But he really didn't die, he just died vis-a-vis Elisha. So we see a number of sources that Eliyahu is still alive. He never died. However, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Dalet Amud Beis talks about the Malachim. I don't know exactly what it's talking about, but somehow the angels have to take a certain amount of flights, or I don't know, flap their wings a number of times to get to this world from wherever they are. So the Gemara says, well, Michal is so great, Michal just needs one flap of the wings and he just gets there in one swoop. Gavriel is not as great, he requires two. Eliyahu, he needs four. He's not as great as Michal and Gavriel. And the Malchum Aves, who's the lowest, he requires eight. He has to flap his wing eight times to get here. But B'shas HaMagefa, when there's a plague of some sort, he needs one. When we're so vulnerable, it just takes one flap of the wings and he's here. But on this list of Malachim, how many flaps of the wings do they require? Eliyahu's on this list, which seems to indicate that Eliyahu is not necessarily still alive in the form of a person, but Eliyahu is alive perhaps in the form of a malach. Now the previous case, the previous sources never indicated that Eliyahu is still a person, just says he's still alive. We don't know if he's alive as a person or as a malach, but this Gemara in Bracha seems to indicate Eliyahu is alive as a malach, the fact that he's on this list and he has to, you know, fly from wherever he is to the world, to the earth. Right, doesn't say he's a human, he's still alive. But this Gemara clearly indicates that he's a malach. So the Chumash HaDeshen, one of the later Rishonim, he had the following question. Chumash HaDeshen wrote his own questions. He doesn't ask these questions, he wanted to get some interesting shilas to deal with, so he wrote a number of questions to himself. And one of the questions in Siman Kuf Beis is, Eishes Eliyahu HaNavi, the wife of Eliyahu HaNavi, or the wife of Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, which we saw earlier, Rabbi Shimon ben Levi was also one of those people who never died. Im yecholin linaseh li'ish acher, can their wife marry somebody else? Are they considered married still? Their husbands never died, they just vanished. And it's real nafkamin, he says. He's serious. He says, nafkamin l'doros, he says. It could happen. Im yizke echad kimohem. Just like Eliyahu and Rabbi Shimon ben Levi were zocha to such great heights, so too nowadays someone could reach that same level, and they also raise the same question, what's the status of their wife? Is their wife still considered married? Because they never actually died, they just disappeared. I was actually talking to a particular Rosh Yeshiva recently from YU. His father has been sick for a number of months, and my father has been his doctor. So I saw him, and he came over to me, he said, I have to tell you that your father is a real Malach Hashem. I said, oh, wow, I'm learning this figure right now. I guess it really is true that a person really can reach that status of being a malach, even bisman hazeh. It really is halach lemaisa, according to this Chumash HaDeshen. So that was the question posed to the Chumash HaDeshen. What's the status of the wife of Eliyahu HaNavi? So he explains, based on the Gemara Nida, also a very interesting Gemara, Daf Ayin Mabez, that there are three foolish questions that the people of Alexandria asked Yeshua ben Hananiah. What were the three foolish questions they asked? One is, what's the status of Ishto Shalot? Is Ishto Shalot, can she be mitame meis? Because she became a pillar of salt. She's obviously dead, but she's a pillar of salt. Does she? If you touch her, are you going to become tumas meis? What about the Ben Ashunamis, the son of the Shunamis, which Elisha revived? Ben Ashunamis died, and Elisha brought him back to life. Well, since he came back to life, was during that time period where he was dead, if you touch that Ben Shunamis, would you become Tame, since in the end of the day, he came back to life? And thirdly, the Gemara says, the third question they asked was, what's the status with all the people in Tchias HaMesim, they come back to life, are they going to require to go through the Tara process of becoming Tar from Tumas Meis? Are they themselves Tame from being dead, or because they come back to life, maybe they are... Maybe they're not considered Tumas Meis. Those are the three questions posed. And the Gemara responds, Rishu ben Hanani responds, that no, all those cases are Tahor, because the Pasuk is Meis Metame. A dead person is Metame, not a pillar of salt. A pillar of salt is not Metame, so Isho Shalot is not Metame. Ben Ashunamis, it says Meis is Metame, but Ben Ashunamis is alive. It was brought back to life. I guess the question is not during the time period when he was dead, but when he came back to life, that you still have a status of being dead. Well, he's alive right now. So since he's alive right now, so he's not considered dead. And in terms of the question of Tchias HaMesim, Los Lavo, we'll worry about it then, the Gemara basically says. Either we'll figure it out then, or Moshe Rabbeinu will be with us also. Moshe Rabbeinu will tell us the halachas, not our concern. So based on this, the Chumash HaDeshen writes, here too also, he's being very specific. The Pasuk says, Eish Yishrei Ehu. An Eish Yishrei Ehu is usher, cannot marry somebody else. If you're married to a person... However, Lo Eishes Malach, a wife of a Malach, a wife of Eliyahu, that's not Usher. So the wife of Eliyahu would be Mutter, because Eliyahu is a status of a Malach, like the Gemara Brachos seemed to have indicated. That's the answer of the Trumas Hadeshim, that the Eishes Eliyahu is Mutter because he's a Malach. However, Chanan Vasserman in Kovet Shirurim, Chedek Beis, doesn't like this. He says the Gemara in Kedushin tries to figure out the heter of Mises Baal. When the husband dies, how do we know that the wife, now the widow, is permitted to marry somebody else? So Rav Chanan basically tries to prove that the death of the husband is a maisa matir. I mean, the two ways to explain why a woman, a widow, would be permitted. Either because b'mitzias, there's no husband anymore, or because you actually need a maisa, some action to take place, there needs to be a maisa misa to matir, to undo the kedushin. Is it mitzias, there's no husband anymore, or because there's a maisa misa? He said, he wants to prove, the Gemara and Kedushin says, you need a maisa misa, you need an action to take place to be matir, the wife. So although Eliyahu disappeared, there was never a maisa misa, there was never an action of death that would matir the wife of Eliyahu. So even though b'mitzias he doesn't exist anymore, she's still usher until some maisa, either a get or a maisa misa, comes along to permit that.
Well, but Kriya says that it's the Gabi Tidek based on this. It's the same story, Gabi Tidek.
Listen, just like we say by Kriya, it's enough.
That's called misa. It's called misa because you never see them in this world.
So I would say in terms of Kriya, you don't really necessarily need a misa, because we also apply Kriya elsewhere by Sefer Torah or Shmur else. So we don't really mean real Misa Mamish, but something really bad. Or, you know, right. So it's not really Misa, but when it comes to being Matir and Isha, you would really need a real Mamish, Misa, Misa maybe. So that's the first attack that Rav Chanan has on the Trumas Hadeshim, that you need a Misa, Misa to Matir. And the second thing he says, well, doesn't the Gemara say in Bava Basra that a dying hukayim, he's still alive? So he's not dead, he's still alive, so she's still married to him. So they're arguing on two points. One point is Misa the Maisa Matir, or is it the lack, the B'mitzias, there's no husband anymore? And the second thing they're arguing about is the status of Eliyahu. It seems that Trumas Hadeshim is categorizing Eliyahu as a Malach, and the Kovet Shirurim says, no, he's still alive. Perhaps not alive b'taras malach, he doesn't say this all, but maybe alive b'taras ish. And it still is considered eshes re'ehu. Maybe one of those two points. So in terms of the first question, I'll just share an interesting nafkamina. When a woman in eshes re'ehu is mutter to marry somebody else, is that, again, the maisa misa, the maisa that is matir here? Or is it the mutzias, there's no father, there's no husband anymore, rather? So the Birki Yosef in Evan Ezer has the following question. Reb Zera, the famous story, Rabbi Reb Zera. Reb Zera gets shechted and firm, and he comes back to life. He's brought back to life. So what's the story with Reb Zera's wife? Reb Zera was dead. So when he was dead, so now the whole Kedushin was uprooted, and now his wife can marry anybody she wants. And now when he came back alive the next day, Reb Zera, so he has to perform another Kedushin. It's like Machzir Grusha. So if you divorce your wife, and you want to remarry her, you have to perform another Kedushin. Or no, do we say, well, since he came back to life, it was the Glai Milsal Mefreya that he never really was dead, and it was never really part of the original Kedushin, and they are still married. That's the suffix that he has. So I think that's a really basic nafkamina of how you understand the heter of Misa, why a woman is allowed to remarry after her husband dies. If it's all about Mitzias, so but Mitzias, right now, Reb Zera is alive. She has a husband right now, even though yesterday she didn't have a husband. Right now, but Mitzias, he is alive, so she's considered married. He wouldn't need a second Kedushin. But if you say it's about a Maisa Misa, that you need an action, so there was a Maisa Misa. Reb Zera did die, the Maisa Misa existed, so that Maisa Misa did uproot the original Kedushin, and you would need another Maisa Kedushin to remarry them. Such an interesting nafkamina. In the same world, the same discussion of people dying, coming back to life, do people die, those issues. But now in terms of our focus, what the status of Eliyahu is, how much is he a person, how much is he a malach, a number of interesting issues come up. So the Gemara in Shabbos has the following question. The Gemara wants to know, Are you allowed to write tefillin on the skin of a dag tahor, in a kosher fish? Can you write tefillin using them as cloth, the skin of a fish as a cloth? So the Amor responds, Nachman Yitzchak responds, well, im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar, if he comes along, he'll tell us. Well, we don't really care. Eliyahu will tell us the answer. What does it mean, im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar? What do you mean, if Eliyahu comes, he'll tell us the answer? Rashi explains, hetav v'isser ein tali bo d'lo b'shamayim hi. We don't really care. With all due respect, we don't really care what Eliyahu says, because lo b'shamayim hi. Eliyahu is a malach, and he's basically b'shamayim. So we don't really care what he tells us what the halacha is. So Gemara says, no, we're going to ask him, does a fish have skin or not have skin? That's what we're going to ask him. We have to ask Eliyahu, go pick out a fish, look at a fish and see if it has skin or not. And furthermore, there's a Mishnah that clearly says that fish do have skin. No, what I mean to say is, when Eliyahu comes, we'll ask if the pluska zuma minei or not. If the zuma, the disgustingness of whatever that's referring to in a fish, that still exists or not. Something that we can't really answer on our own. But the Gemara comes out here and says that you cannot pass an halacha based on Eliyahu HaNavi, because Eliyahu is a malach and lo b'shamayim. Now, that poses a big question to a famous understanding of the words, or the word teku means. Oftentimes, when the Gemara has a suffix, it doesn't have an answer, the Gemara will implement the word teku. So what does teku mean? So Tosfos Yom Tov, in the end of Adios, writes, the Mahacha Regilin Lomar de Teku, it's really Rashi Tevos. Teku means Tishbi, which is Eliyahu, Yitaritz, Kushios Vibayos. The Tishbi Eliyahu will come along, he will answer all our questions. Nearly Tehei Kai, even though the simple understanding is Teku is Tehei Kai, it should stand as is, we don't know the answers, it's just a stalemate, I guess. The other interpretation is Teku no means that Eliyahu will answer our questions. Well, how could Eliyahu answer our questions? Didn't we say before, lo b'shamayim hi? You're talking about the Gemara and Shabbos?
Yeah.
So the Gemara said, we're not asking Eliyahu a halachic question there. It's really more of a Matzias question, which we'll get to.
So everyone agrees that halacha wouldn't be
at this stage, that's what it seems like. I mean, right now we're not sure. The Gemara in Shabbos seems to indicate when it comes to halacha isver heter, we can't paskin like Eliyahu because lo b'shamayim hi. But Tosfos Yom Tov, and the words teku appear in a number of places, seems that teku means we will listen to what Eliyahu tells us the answers are.
What's the Mishnah in Adios that he's talking about?
What's the Mehacha review? So it's talking about the Tum of Atara stuff and Yuchsin issues. So it seems like Matzias issues at first glance, yeah. Yeah, exactly, right. So Mishnah Melech is about to say that he wants to give the answer that, oh, we really only listen to Eliyahu when it comes to Matzias questions, like the Gemara and Shabbos. But when it comes to Halacha questions, we don't really answer it like him. But that, if you look all over Shas, we find Tekus all the time in the context of Halacha Shilas.
Also, we not want Rashi and Shabbos, the Lo B'Shamayim, may not relate to Eliyahu and Navi as a Malach as much as relates to Eliyahu and Navi as a Navi. It's also Lo B'Shamayim.
That's also a problem. You, a Navi and Ruach HaKodesh.
It's not necessarily right that he's a Malach.
Oh, I see.
It's because he's a Navi.
That's true also.
That's why we can't approach him anymore than anyone.
But does that mean to say a Navi who's a Talmud Chacham?
Depends. Him,
I guess the question is, what, how do we know maybe he's using based on his Chachma, not necessarily his Nevuah?
Well, right.
So I guess you have to figure out what how he's working. So, okay. Right, that's a whole discussion. Could you paskin based on Ritumim, Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah?
Maybe in terms of like that Eliyahu's going to paskin based on Ruach HaKodesh, you know, one side of say like a Chakira. You feel like
But there are a number of instances where it's not necessarily based on Matzias, it's based on how do you understand the particular halacha. The Mishnah Melech thinks it's all about Matzias. He will only pass like him in Matzias, but we find the words teku all over the place that it's even about halachic issues.
Yeah, no, but even when you're talking about a halachic issue, it always can't be broken down that is it how do you look at it? So Eliyahu is not going to pass the halacha side, he's going to pass the how do you look at it side.
But
this is how you look at it.
I'm not sure that's always true. I think there are plenty of halachic questions that are not based on a suffix in Metzias. We know what the Metzias is, we're still not sure how to categorize it, let's say. Right. Yeah, all right.
do we know, like, if we apply the concept of Lubashmai being, like, after the Baimos Mashiach and all that? Because Tikkun, we're referring to, like, at times of Mashiach, all the questions will be answered. Maybe we're okay with at that time.
I think even then, I think so. I think Torah is given to us forever. I think so. If what you're saying is right, then, you know, Tikkun means when he comes eventually, Mos Mashiach, then maybe we could pass him like in. But I think even then, I assume, we have the concept of Lo B'Shemayim. You guys are learning that this morning, you and Yehuda. So you tell me if you found anything different about that. Right, so again, so the Mishnah Melech again thinks it's only Matthias issues, but Rabbi Kivi Eger, on the Rambam, on this Mishnah Melech, writes, quotes a number of Gemaras that seem to have this application of Teiku, even in the context of Halachic Shilas, not necessarily Matthias Shilas. So the next Gemara in Bava Metzia has a real halachic shailas presented, and also a very interesting discussion whether Eliyahu keeps the mitzvahs or not. Similar to what we had by Karsh Baruch Hu a couple weeks ago, does God keep the mitzvahs? The question is, does Eliyahu keep the mitzvahs? So let's assume right now that you know, Malachim and God don't have to keep the mitzvahs. They do if they want, but they don't have to. So Rabbi Bar Avua encountered Eliyahu standing in the base kfaros of a non-Jewish cemetery. So he asked him a number of shailas. Could you do an assessment for a Baal Chov? And Eliyahu responds, well, based on the Gzeir Shava, from Erechin you can. Okay, it's a halachic question, and he gives a halachic answer. So we see you do trust Eliyahu in halachic circumstances. Then the Gemara says, what about, how do you know, what's the source that La'arum Shalo Yitrum, that a naked person can't take Truma? So he says, oh, the source is from here. Okay. Then he asks Eliyahu, aren't you a Kohen? Aren't you a Kohen? Based on a number of sources, Eliyahu was really Pinchas, and Pinchas was a Kohen, or became a Kohen. So aren't you a Kohen? What are you doing standing in a cemetery? So Eliyahu says, didn't you ever learn Taros? So it says in the Mishnah, in Taros, Bryce and Taros, that the cemetery of non-Jews are not Mentame. So that's why I'm standing here. But you're right, if I was in a Jewish cemetery, it would be a problem, because I am a Kohen, I keep Halacha, I keep Tumah V'Tara, it would have been a problem. So then he says, well, why haven't you learned it? Just finishing the story for a second. So why didn't you learn Taros? He says, I can't even learn four. You expect me to learn six Siddur? He says, what's the difficulty? Why are you having such a hard time? I just have to work. I need to make money. I need Parnasa. So the Gemara goes on to explain a story. Eliyahu drags him into Gan Eden, and he starts collecting leaves, and basically sells a lot of stuff from Gan Eden, makes a lot of money, and fine. But for our purposes right now, Eliyahu, yeah. Four Siddharm?
Yeah.
Of,
Four
Siddharm Mishnah. Or of Shas. Yeah. Yeah. No, Moed, Nezikin, Nashir. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, so Eliyahu clearly keeps the mitzvahs, based on Gemara, clearly keeps the mitzvahs, and he would have kept the Dinah in Tilma V'Tara if he would be standing in a base kvaros of a Jewish base kvaros, it would be a problem. Seemingly, this Gemara seems to indicate that Eliyahu is a person. Because we said last time, based on the Marasha, Pashas is a Karsh Baruch Hu, is clearly Ruch, and he's entirely spiritual. Tumah V'Tara does not affect him. So too, Lechor HaMalach wouldn't be affected by Tumah V'Tara either. You could maybe Mechalik, I don't know how those things work exactly, but Pashas Dvaram is Eliyahu was a person. So if that's the case, and he can't become Metame, so Tosas asks, well, don't we know this famous story that the son of the Almana didn't he bring the son who died back to life? And in touching the son, and placing his hands on top of his hands, and his mouth to mouth, so didn't Eliyahu touch the dead body? And he was a Kohen. So the answer is no. He was allowed then because it was so clear to Eliyahu that he's going to bring him back to life, and for Pikuach Nefesh reasons, you're allowed to bring him back to life. You could be over this, sir, of Tumah for a Kohen because it's Pikuach Nefesh. So the Chivas Radbaz has a number of questions he asks on Tosa. I won't go into them, but I'll give a number of other answers he brings to this very question. How is Eliyahu allowed to become a Tame for the Ben Noshel Alamano, the son of the widow who had died? So one answer he brings is, well, that son never really died. And brings a number of Rayas, and then he rejects it. But this son really was never dead. He was just very, very sick. So there was no problem. Another approach he brings is that, based on Rabbeinu Chai, that his mother was not Jewish. So, not Jewish, we said earlier in the Gemara, that it's not a problem of becoming Tameh, the mace, because an Akum does not produce Tumas mace. Then he rejects that because it's brought down in Chazal that this son that was revived ended up being Yonah HaNavi. And it couldn't be that Yonah had a non-Jewish mother, maybe he converted, he doesn't like that so much. So, that's another answer. And then he says, maybe really it was a Rasha. To Kadesh Kadeshim Shemaim. He wanted to produce a Kiddush Hashem. So that's why he was able to override the Isser becoming Tameh to produce a Kiddush Hashem. So no, maybe the answer gives another answer. There was really a Meitz Mitzvah. No one was really around to bury the mace. The Taurus Meitz Mitzvah. But what, so once he had that Heter to go to the dead body, he was able to revive the body also because of Meitz Mitzvah. I'm not sure why that's so true because I think his mother was around there also. His mother was the one who brought Eliyahu back there. But okay. And finally he says, you know what? The opinion that says Pinchas was Eliyahu, and that's why Eliyahu was a Kohen, doesn't mean Eliyahu was a Kohen beguf, physically. He had the neshama of Pinchas. But he wasn't really a Kohen. He wasn't really a Kohen. So why didn't Eliyahu want to, you know, back the story in Bava Metzia when the Amora asked him, well, why are you standing in the base Kvaros? Aren't you a Kohen? Eliyahu really should have told him, and could have told him, that I'm not really a Kohen. I just have the neshama of Pinchas, but I'm not really a Kohen. He didn't want to reveal that yisod to him. There's a deep soul he didn't want to reveal to him. Now, for some reason, Radbaz did want to reveal it, but Eliyahu didn't want to reveal that soul. So those are a number of different answers how to get around the problem of how Eliyahu was Metameh. Then the Gemara in Erevin, which also seems to indicate that Eliyahu keeps the mitzvahs, Gemara has a very interesting shaila. Is there Tchumim, the issue of Tchumim on Shabbos, above 10 Tfachim? Things that fly, let's say. If a bird were to keep Shabbos. So Gemara says, well, didn't Rav Chista of Sur, didn't he hear a shir on Shabbos? Every Shabbos he heard a special shir, Shabbos morning. And didn't Eliyahu give him the shir every Shabbos? So Eliyahu comes down, Mishamayim, clearly going outside the Tchum. So clearly you don't have to keep, there's no Tchum above 10 Tfachim. So he's like, no. Eliyahu wasn't giving the shear. That was a shade called Yosef. And the shade called Yosef didn't have to keep the mitzvahs. He was allowed to. Eliyahu keeps the mitzvahs. And then Gemara goes on to an interesting discussion about when Mashiach can come, cannot come, when Eliyahu can come or cannot come. So on this question of whether or not there's an issue of Tchumim above 10 Tfachim, does Eliyahu keep this mitzvah or not? There's a very famous Jewish Chassam Sofer. This is the last Mar Malkum, number 19. Which deals with this question. Very, very long tshuva. And I'm going to I cut out most of it just to get to the punchline. And basically, Chassam Sofer writes that Eliyahu certain times acts as an ish and certain times he acts as a malach. That's probably it. That when it's talking about the Gemara going up and down from Shemaim, that's referring to the neshama. The neshama that leaves the goof of Eliyahu goes up and down. And that neshama goes between the Malachi Asharis. But the very goof of Eliyahu still remains in Gan Eden, still in this world. And this will answer a number of questions. Whenever Eliyahu reveals himself to a member of Klal Yisrael, he's revealing himself as a goof. And therefore, anytime he gives a teiku or paskin talacha, we're allowed to paskin like him. He's not paskining based on being a malach, based on bashamayimi. He's paskining based on being a person. He's acting as an individual. When the Gemara in Shabbat says, when Eliyahu will eventually come to us, that's referring to Eliyahu as a malach. But when Eliyahu appears to somebody, and he answers shailas, that's him appearing b'taras ish. And he acts as any other chachma Yisrael. And we can paskin based on him because he's ish. It's in this world, not in the other world. And that's why he explains also the issue of standing the base kfaros, because there too also he was standing as an ish, he was standing the base kfaros. That's why he had to keep the halacha of Tumah V'Tahara. As a malach, he would not have to follow halachas. So basically, Chassam Sofer writes, at certain times he acts as an ish, and certain times he acts as a malach. And depending on the circumstances, that's how you get out of most of these shadows in terms of passing halacha, in terms of keeping the mitzvahs and stuff like that. And In particular, we you know there are a few places where throughout the year we have this concept of Eliyahu. We have the concept of Eliyahu in the, by Kisei Shel Eliyahu in the Bris Milah. And the way the Lashon of the Torah is and the Shulchan Aruch is that we have a Kisei Eliyahu Shehu Nikra Malach HaBris. When Eliyahu appears at a Bris, he's appearing as a Malach. So that's the Lashon of the Torah, appearing as a Malach. So just when I finished recently Kedushin, so I found another answer in terms of the all these different questions of sometimes Eliyahu, we can't pass like him, sometimes he's a Malach, sometimes he's an Ish. So while the Chassam Sofer says that he's it's really one person acting as different ways, I saw Rashi here, based in the Gemara. The Gemara in Daf Ayin and Aleph writes that when someone would create a psul, a zera psul, a apostle child, the Gemara says that Eliyahu would hold down this person, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu would start whipping the person, give him malchus. That's what the Gemara says.
Kid?
Okay, the person who caused, the father and perhaps mother also, the one who produced these children. Eliyahu would hold him down and Kadosh Baruch Hu would whip him. So Rashi asks this question. It's in parentheses. I'm not sure if it was Rashi himself who took it out, who left it there, but it's in parentheses. Rashi asks, this Eliyahu can't be the Eliyahu that we know. Because if that was the case, who did all this holding down of the whipping before Eliyahu came around? The years before Eliyahu existed, who was doing that for Kadosh Baruch Hu? Only once Eliyahu came into existence, and then did he hold down this person, and then God whipped him? What happened before Eliyahu was born? He says, no, there's a malach called Eliyahu, a different person. So this would give another answer. There are two, not that, according to Chassam Sofer, there's one person called Eliyahu. Sometimes he appears as a malach, sometimes he appears as an ish. This Rashi seems to indicate that, no, they're two different people. Or not people, but there's one person, which is Eliyahu Navi, as we know it, and there's a malach called Eliyahu. That's a malach Eliyahu listed in the Gemara Brachos, Daf Dalam Abayz, along with Gavriel and Michal and Amalach HaMalas. That's Eliyahu HaMalach that the Rashi is referring to, not the Eliyahu HaNavi. That too would get out of a number of these issues of who Eliyahu is. There are really two Eliyahus. There's the Malach and then there's the Ish. Different than the Chassam Sofer. All right, so let's...